inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
Probably the best way to buy a rental property without a lot of money is the BRRRR strategy. This is where you buy a fixer-upper property for way under market value. And when you fix the property up, you've basically increased the value of the property. And the amount of money that the property has increased in value basically becomes your down payment. And Paul, this is what you've been doing to build out your rental portfolio. How's it been going so far?
It's been going absolutely fantastic. I think using the BRRRR strategy, I had to use a very small amount of my own money, and I've been able to really build my portfolio using other people's money.
That's awesome. I love it. Have you had any troubles along the way?
All kinds of troubles. I mean, the first one I did sat empty for 4 months because I couldn't find a single contractor to come out and even look at it. I've had all kinds of rehab issues, and most of my BRRRRs have not turned out perfectly. I've had to leave some money into each one of them.
A lot of times when you hear stories from investors that are using the BRRRR strategy, it can almost sound like everything always works out perfectly. But that's not always the case. And I think on the podcast today, I've got a pretty realistic view of what it's like to do the BRRRR strategy. Things haven't always worked out perfectly for Paul. He's had some issues along the way, but he's figured things out and he's making things work. And the amazing thing is he's making things work from across the country. Paul lives in Oregon and he's doing BRRRRs in Tennessee. So on the show today, we're going to see how he's doing that, how he's making things work. We'll take a look at one of his most recent deals. We'll look at all of his numbers, and we'll also take a look at his entire portfolio and figure out how he is profiting $3,000 a month. That's $3,000 a month net after all of his expenses. Joining us on the show today from Bend, Oregon is Paul Singer. We'll take a really quick break to thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll talk to Paul. It's a lot of work to find a really good rental property. And when you actually find that property, you want to make sure you're working with a lender that can get that loan closed. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender and her specialty is helping investors finance rental properties. She has a ton of loan programs and she can find something customized to you for your situation. If you want to find out more or you're ready to get started today, just go to RidgeLendingGroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, LendingGroup.com, NMLS 42056. A good deal on a rental property isn't going to last very long. To win properties today, you need to move quickly when a deal comes on the market, but it takes time to analyze a property. I want to let you know about an app where you can analyze deals on your phone in seconds. It's called Ask Rick. That's R-I-C for Rental Income Calculator. You can analyze a deal with the push of a button. You can figure out the rent, your mortgage payment, your expenses, and figure out the cash flow. If the numbers make sense, you can make an offer right there on the app, or you can send a calendar invite to your agent to see the property in person. Ask Rick is currently offering a free 7-day trial. Just search for Ask Rick in the App Store, or go to Just Ask Rick. That's R-I-C, justaskrick.com.
Rental Income Podcast.
The first thing I want to ask you about this and what you've been doing. So you live in Oregon, but your properties are in Tennessee. How are you doing that from so far away?
I mean, with technology now, it makes it a lot easier. I learned I had one rental property here in Oregon before, and I realized I never went into the property for an entire year. So why did I need to buy in the same city that I already have a property? So I started looking for better markets, and we've come up with different ways with my contractors and the people that I work with to be able to do it all remotely. The time difference is a little hard. Sometimes I get calls and, you know, 5 a.m, but I've learned to work around that.
And so you picked Tennessee just because the cash flow is better?
Yeah, cash flow is better. The home to rent price is really what I was looking at. And I ended up picking Chattanooga just because job market was increasing and the population is increasing.
Okay, awesome. All right, well, tell me your strategy. So like, what are you looking for? Like maybe what are the neighborhoods like? What are the properties like? Like what are you looking for?
Sure. Yeah. The first time I went out to Chattanooga, I've only been there twice ever. I just drove around with my realtor and literally circled on a map neighborhoods that I liked. So the main things that I look for are good school districts, because I only do 3-2 or larger houses. I'd like to put families in them, and I like them to be in good school districts. So that's the main thing I'm looking for. When I'm looking on the MLS and things like that, I love to find houses that look just slightly outdated, no major foundation issues or framing issues. It just looks like grandma and grandpa live there, and then I was able to purchase the house and just update it.
How did you know, like, what a good neighborhood was? I mean, you're not from Tennessee, I assume, right?
Sure. Nope, I'm not.
Okay, so, like, how did you know? Because I'm sure that there's good parts of Chattanooga, and I'm sure there's not so good parts. How did you know where to look?
Yeah, definitely compared to Oregon, I think in general, there's a general sense of the neighborhoods there. But over there, I mean, two blocks over can make a whole difference. So I was extremely lucky. The first realtor I met there was also an investor, and his family had investment properties. So he really knew those areas pretty well. And then once I had my property manager working with me also, they've been super helpful in telling me, we wouldn't recommend this neighborhood. We would recommend this neighborhood.
Okay, awesome. And so then you're looking for houses that don't need a gut rehab. It's like mainly cosmetic updates.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of times we'll gut the kitchen and bathrooms if needed, but the rest of them, usually we pull up carpet, put down, fake wood planking if needed. But most of my rehab costs comes in the kitchen and the bathroom, just because I find that's where you will be able to really increase the rent when those areas look a lot nicer.
And you said that you're buying the properties with cash. Is it actual cash that you're using, or are you using hard money or some kind of other loan?
Yeah, I think a lot of times people think that when you say you're buying a cash, it has to be all your cash. That's not the case at all. When I first started this process, I had maybe only $20,000 of my own money to put into it. So the things that I've done is I had pulled out a HELOC on my house here in Oregon. It's gone up in value quite a bit, almost doubled in the time that I've owned it. So I was able to pull out a HELOC. I was able to get a personal line of credit from a local bank. And so when I pull that money out and put it in my bank account, when I then go to spend it to pay for the house, I call it cash, because at that point it is my cash, even though there's technically loans on it. I can say it's an all cash offer.
Okay. Yeah. So for anyone that doesn't understand that, so a HELOC is a home equity loan. So the house that you live in has appreciated in value. And so you've been able to take out that equity, and that's what you're using to buy these properties.
Right. And I didn't even do a loan. I did a line of credit.
Line of credit,
so
okay.
If I'm not using that money and the bank account is sitting at zero in the HELOC, I don't have to pay any interest on it at all. I only start paying interest when I take that money out to purchase the house.
Why don't we take a look at one of your deals? Maybe we can look at the most recent house you bought.
Sure. It's in Hexton, Tennessee. It's a 4-2 and found it on the MLS. These family had been had bought it, and they started the rehab, but they weren't able to finish it. They didn't have enough capital, so they put it on the market. But there was enough things wrong with it where a normal buyer coming in with a loan wasn't able to buy it because the banks wouldn't loan on it. So I bought it for $164,000. It was on the MLS. I ended up putting $44,000 into the rehab for a total of $208,000 of what I had into the property. Once I got the tenants in and the whole rehab finished, I had the bank come out and do an appraisal, and it appraised for $260,000.
Okay. So for the property, how did you figure out, like, when you found the property? So I guess you found the property on the MLS, right?
Correct.
Okay. So you found the property. How did you know that this was going to be $42,000 to rehab the property?
Well, that's part of it. You never know. At some point in every single one of the deals that I've ever done, I had to go, I think this is going to be close enough, because if you wait for a perfect deal, you're never going to find it. So I just had a sense now. This is the seventh one that I've done in Chattanooga. I kind of have an idea just by looking at the pictures that I can tell, okay, it's going to need this and it's not going to need this. But one of the big things that I do is during the home inspection, when I first put in the offer, I now have my whole team show up for the home inspection. So my contractor, my property manager, my realtor, I even send subcontractors, like the people that do the flooring, people do the windows, roofing, they are all there for the home inspection and stay for the whole 2 hours and walk around with the home inspector, so that even before I'm done accepting my contingency on the home inspection, I can get all those people's feedback on what they think it would cost, just a general idea, and if it seems like a good idea or not.
Okay, so when you looked at the pictures, you could tell, okay, this, based on my experience and what this property needs, it's probably going to be about $40,000 to fix it up.
That's right. Actually, this one, I thought it would be a little less, but it turns out when we kind of tore into it, and because there was a storm locally, there were some issues that we didn't know about. So it increased in price. I was kind of actually guessing around the 35 range. So this one had some issues.
Okay. And when your contractors come over during the home inspection, are you saying to them, okay, look, we're going to gut the kitchen. I guess from the pictures, you probably have a general idea of what you want to have done. So are you directing them to give you bids on these particular things, or are you leaving it up to their judgment to see what needs to be done?
I really leave it up to their judgment. I mean, of all of my houses there, I've never stepped foot in a single one of them. So I can guess a little bit from pictures, but I really leave it up to their judgment. Just like, you know, the cabinets, I can't touch them and see if they feel like real wood, if they're in decent shape or not. And the contractor I've used is the same one I've used on all these other houses. So he has a really good idea of what is useful and what we need to get rid of. So I really leave it up to him completely. And then when he does do all the work that he needs to do, we've used the same exact product on every single one of the houses. If he has to replace the cabinets, exactly the same cabinets that I have in all the other houses that needed them replaced. But I always think, you know, do what you do best and hire the rest. These guys are professionals. They're the ones swinging the hammers every day. They know how to do it. So I really just totally trust them.
And how do you keep from getting ripped off? Because I got to think that a contractor is thinking, oh, this is some big shot out of town investor. They think you're some rich guy. Like, how do you not get ripped off?
I would say some of it has been luck, but a lot of it is just because, you know, I started with that original realtor and then I couldn't find anyone to be in the first house to do any work for me. So then I ended up finding this contractor through my realtor. So a lot of it is referral. Okay. And when someone else has done 3 or 4 jobs with me and they refer someone, when they show up, they say, hey, this guy is legit. He pays me every single time on time. He lets me do my own work at my own pace and lets me pick the quality that I want to put in as long as it seems like it works for his numbers. So far I've been really lucky with that. The other thing with my contractor is on every single line item on the contract, I have him take a before, during, and after photo. And then I also have my realtor and property managers go over before I pay him the last payment and make sure the work actually looks like it's happening. But at this point we have such a good rapport that, I'm definitely putting more trust in him at this point, but at the beginning, I definitely would have people go over and check his work and then make him send me pictures so I could see it was actually being done.
Have you ever felt like it's a disadvantage not being there? Or at this point, would you just be getting in the way if you were there?
There's a couple disadvantages, just like trying to work with utility companies or things like that, or subcontractors. They're like, can you just come down and drop off a check? And I'm like, no, I live, you know, right, the other side of the right country. So that's a little hard. But actually, I'm starting to see it as an advantage because I get in situations where if I live there, I would just go over and do it myself. So it kind of forces me to find these people that I need to do things. Like, for instance, I had a guy come in and redo the hardwood floorings one time. Well, he was done, but he didn't clean up after himself. My contractor didn't want to clean up all the dust. The cleaning crew said we can do everything, but we don't do windows. So then I had to find someone to do the windows, where if I was there, I'd probably just go over and do it. But now that I'm not there, I have to think of it really more as an investment and as a project manager instead of someone that I can just go over and start doing all the work myself, because I want to look at it as an investment instead of a second job.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, so yeah, you're thinking of yourself as an investor, not as a rehabber. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, there's nothing that you being there isn't going to make this go smoother. It's not going to make the rehab go faster. It sounds like your contractors know what they need to do and they do it.
And even if I was there and it did go slightly faster one time, this problem's going to come up again on the next one or possibly the one after it. So if I start putting these systems into place where I don't have to be there, I can solve it the first time instead of having to solve it personally in person every single time afterwards.
All right. Well, let's take a look at your numbers a little bit more here. So you said you bought the property for $164,000. The rehab was $44,000. So your all in was $208,000.
Yes.
When you got the appraisal done, how much did the property appraise for?
It appraised at 260.
260. Okay. And so you were not able to get all of the money out, right? That wasn't enough. You had to leave some money in there.
That's correct. And I've found that on most of my properties that I've had to leave some in there. And I know it's not the perfect burr, but I try to buy houses that are tend to be higher, you know, B type properties, and they're a little bit nicer. And then I know that the cash flow might not be as perfect and I have to be leave a little bit more in, but I know that the tenants have been so much better. I mean, of all my houses, I have never had a single tenant leave. So I know that I have to leave a little bit in there. And I also think if I was to buy the same house at 260 and put 25% down like normal, I'd have to leave a lot more in.
Right.
So while it's not perfect, it is way better. And I'm able to use my own money many, many times over compared
sure.
if I just bought one that was already fixed.
Right. I mean, if you think of it as you bought this property with an $8,000 down payment, I mean, that's really a lot better than 25% down. Now, the $8,000 that you had to leave in there, you said that the rehab was more expensive than you thought it was going to be. Was it going to be the perfect burr when you bought it, but it ended up not being the perfect burr because you went over budget?
Yes, exactly. All the numbers looked like beforehand. I put everything into an Excel spreadsheet and try to figure it all out. And I thought beforehand that this looked really good. The problem with thinking that beforehand is you don't always know what it's going to appraise at. So that's really a guess. And
right.
so it's hard to tell beforehand if it's going to be a perfect burr or not. But yeah, on this one, we had all kinds of issues that hadn't really come up. For instance, during the home inspection, they didn't notice that all the plumbing for the entire house, except for the two toilets, was running out into the front yard, straight out into the yard. So that's not the the outdoor shower that most people are looking for. It was a big issue.
Right.
So that was one of them. When we were looking at the houses and all the inspectors and everything were out there, the yard looked really nice. Well, then it rained after I bought it. And there's an entire property behind it on a hill that's been cleared for development. Well, all of it basically drains into my backyard and looked like a river hitting the foundation. So I had to have a large French drain installed in the backyard. During that same storm, we had a big tree fall on the house, mess up some of the shingles, mess up some of the plywood underneath them. So there's a lot of issues that we did not see coming beforehand. We thought the plumbing was fine and we thought the drainage was all good that I couldn't necessarily see, and that definitely increased the price. You know, one thing I saw was that it had a new roof. That sounds great. What we didn't realize is that roof had been leaking for a while, for years before, and the subflooring in that house needed completely replaced. So where I thought we would just be able to put a new top layer of flooring on, most of the house had to be completely taken down to the joists.
Yeah, I mean, stuff is always going to come up during a rehab. So yeah, I think that's a good lesson for anyone listening to this, is just when you're looking at doing a burr or looking at doing a rehab, always pad some extra money in there because stuff is always going to come up. So let's talk about your mortgage payment. So how much is your mortgage payment on this property?
It's $960 a month.
$960, okay. And how much do you have the property rented out for?
It's rented at $1,650 a month.
Okay, so you've got about $700 left over after you pay the mortgage payment?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So, all right, so you've got $700. Now, what do you do with that money? Because you're going to have repairs. You probably won't have many repairs because the property is freshly rehabbed, and you'll probably have some vacancy from time to time. So how are you budgeting for that?
Sure. Some of the money on that is, you know, paying other expenses also on top of the mortgage. So I'm paying my property manager 8%. And there's also, I have a slush fund with my property manager for each house, basically of $500. So if anything is below $500 that breaks, I tell them just fix it. Don't even tell me. I'll see it on the next statement. If it's above that, I might try to shop around. But in general, I tend to use what their recommendation is. The rest of the money, anything that I have additional, just goes right back into the investment on whatever house I'm currently working on. I don't really take the paycheck for myself yet. It just keeps being reinvested because I feel like I'm in the acquisition phase right now. So
yep.
I'm trying to buy more of them. They're all at fixed rate interest rates. So I'm not trying to pay that down any quicker. So all that extra money just gets rolled right back
okay.
into the next house.
You're putting it aside. So that's like your future down payment money, or you have a slush fund if you have some major repair someday.
Absolutely.
Okay. Awesome. Now let's take a look at your entire portfolio. So how many burrs have you done?
Oh, this is going to be number 7.
Number 7. Okay. So when you add up the rent for all seven of your properties, how much rent are you bringing in every month?
It's about $11,250.
Okay. And what are the mortgage payments for all your properties?
It's right around $6,000 total.
Okay. So now you've got, what's that, about $5,000 left over?
Yep.
Okay. So you've got $5,000. Now, you've got, like you said, your property management fee, other repairs that might come up. How much is your deposit that you get from your property manager every month?
Sure. So out of that $5,000, there's always different expenses, like you're saying. But I would say in general, I'm taking about $3,000. I could take it for myself, but that's what I'm rolling into the other account, whatever the current house that I'm working on. My take home after everything on average is around $3,000.
Okay. And so every month, like with your property management fee, whatever other little things that might come up, it's about $2,000 a month.
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, awesome. So $3,000 a month that you're getting. And how much money would you say you've invested in total in your rental properties?
That'd be tough to say just because some of the loans, on the HELOC and personal line of credit, I'm paying interest. But I would say in general, I have maybe $45,000 of my own money over the last 2 years that I've had to leave into the properties.
Wow, that is great. That is really awesome. Well, Paul, you are doing great. I think you're off to a great start. So where do you see yourself going from here? Are you going to continue to do more BRRRs?
I'm definitely going to continue doing the BRRRs. I mean, everyone asks me, could I go into multifamily or start borrowing more? But my system is working and I have a whole crew and I just don't want to mess up that system. I know there's potential to make more in other ways, but if it's working, I'm just not going to break it right now. So I'm going to keep going. I'm at 8 properties total if you count the one that I live in currently. I'd like to get somewhere to the 12 to 14 range, just because if I kind of back calculate how much that I would like to make monthly from it, where I feel like I could quit my job if I chose to. Kind of the 10 range is what I need. So I'm going to try to go a little higher than that. And then over the next few years, try to pay down each one of those loans to where I'm about 50% of what I owe compared to what it would appraise for. It's just a place that I feel a little bit more comfortable because I know paying it down 100% for me is not worth it just because these are fixed rate loans. Sure. And they're such low interest rates. So I'd like to get to that point, and then I would sell off, or maybe two houses somewhere in that range that may be underperforming compared to the others, and then use that money I make on those to pay down those loans quicker on the other houses.
The other thing you have going for you is that rents are going to increase over time, but your mortgage payments are going to stay the same. So that $3,000 that you're making right now, that could be $4,000 in a couple of years.
Definitely. We are already seeing, like I said, of all my houses, I haven't had a single tenant leave. So I have not increased the rent on any of them, even when the leases come up. So when that does happen, I'm already seeing houses, the rent prices going up substantially there. So I know it will happen in the future, but it just hasn't yet.
If anybody wants to reach out to Paul, I've got his contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode352. I'd like to thank today's sponsor for making this episode possible. It's Chailey Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. Chailey is a nationwide lender, and her specialty is helping investors finance rental properties. That's all she does all day, every day, is help investors finance rental properties. She has a ton of loan programs, and she can find something customized to you for your situation. If you want to find out more or you want to set up a time to talk to Chailey personally, just go to ridgelendinggroup.com. That's RIDGE lendinggroup.com, NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast today. Make sure you follow the show or subscribe. We put out new interviews every single Tuesday, and if you follow the show, you'll be notified as soon as those episodes come out. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.